So I haven't heard yesterday's podcast.
Oh, okay.
I'm totally behind the times. What did I miss?
Well, we were talking about we dove into the numbers where we are financially versus where we thought we would be.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
And we're much farther ahead than we thought we would be. Which raises a bunch of questions about what we should do next. Which means that we should probably accelerate our growth. And then we talk about cereal.
Well, I'm really interested to hear what you guys talked about, what you guys had to say about cereal.
We just basically said it was a game. The playing field from where we thought we were 3 months ago to where we are now, everything is different. Like, cereal has done so much work to raise the profile of podcasting that it makes us feel like we need to be moving more quickly than we had originally imagined in our plan.
For you, is cereal like the high tide, or the success of cereal the high tide that will float all boats?
Oh, absolutely. Like, we're already seeing huge number lifts. And now there's a hashtag after cereal, which is like, everybody in the world is like, what do I listen to now? You know? But it's interesting, you know, so in the podcast, I don't know if you want to get into this when we're talking, or are we recording right now for real? Like, what should I?
I'm happy to be recording now for real if you are.
Yeah, no, I'm fine too. I was just wondering I was just saying that this is just very fresh on my mind, but we were, so yesterday in the podcast, I recorded the podcast and we were, so it was this conversation in our own internal conversations. Like, cereal comes up fairly frequently because it has been such a game changer and sort of like, in all fantastic ways for us, but like in ways that we feel like we should respond to. And in other words, there's now, I don't know, a couple million people who know about podcasts who didn't know about them before and are looking for things to listen to. So we feel like we should try to meet that new demand more quickly than we had originally imagined. Right.
Right. Because you have only two shows now.
We have two shows. We have a third on the way, but like, it feels like we have a bunch of other ideas, and originally we were thinking, like, we'll get the three shows launched, we'll figure out if they attract an audience, if they make money, and then we'll launch three or four more the next year.
Huh.
But, you know, the shows have already been doing better than we thought, and we're almost at break even. But the fact that we're almost at break even now means that we should probably spend a lot more money and purposely not become profitable.
Right. And by break even, you mean like your ad revenue is covering the costs of production, not that you're paying back the $1.5 million in investment, right?
Yeah. We're never going to pay it back. Hopefully the company, you know, quintuples, decuples in value. And then what started as a $100,000 investment is now a $1 million investment. That's the way we would pay it back. We'll never actually probably pay people their $100,000 back plus a 7% coupon or whatever.
Right.
Although, you know, legally they could ask us to, and in which case we would.
So are you at a point now where you feel like, well, hell, we've got money, we've got listeners who are dying for more content, well, let's just spitball a bunch of different shows and see what happens, see what sticks?
That's what we originally were thinking, like, we're not going to start doing that until we see how these first three shows do. But the first three shows have already sort of outperformed what we thought they'd be doing at this point. The first two, and then the third is on the way. So we thought let's move up the schedule. Let's start spending more money now. Let's start developing more shows now. Let's try to get things into the pipeline now. So I'm talking about all that on the podcast, and I'm talking about like the reason that all this seems to be happening is because of Serial. Serial has been first of all, it's attracted a lot of listeners into the podcasting world, and some of whom are discovering our podcast. So it's helping us with our numbers. And also, it's just sort of raised the profile of podcasting in general. And then in the podcast, I'm bringing up Serial, and then I'm like, you know, and I sort of perfunctorily I say, you know, and if anybody out there hasn't heard of Serial, Serial is this podcast launched by This American Life, you know, about a murder that happened in 1999. And then I said in the podcast, I said, you know, and it's And just out of curiosity, if anybody is hearing about Serial for the very first time right now as I'm saying these words, you occupy a very strange niche in American culture, and I want to hear your story, so please tweet at me.
Huh.
Thinking that there was nobody, that that Venn diagram would include zero people.
Like everybody who's listening to Startup is also listening to Serial or is
has heard of it. Not necessarily as a fan, not necessarily as listening, but like everybody has heard of it, right? And my Twitter has been blowing up this morning. Like, you know, I think we're well over several dozen people who have tweeted at me saying, like, first time I ever heard of it.
Wow.
Which is really curious. I don't know what to make of it exactly, but it's really fascinating. I found it very fascinating because Serial, the audience is, I think, well over 10 times our audience. And our audience is bigger than what we thought we would have at this point by a lot. So, like, I don't know. It's just, it's really interesting.
That's amazing. Let us back up.
Yeah.
And can you please explain to me, explain to the people who are listening, what you're setting out to do?
I'm setting out to launch a media company focusing on narrative audio journalism, as well as other kinds of narrative audio programming.
What does that mean? What does the second part mean?
I think right now, I worked for a long time at This American Life, and then while at This American Life, I co-founded Planet Money, which is a podcast about business and economics with Adam Davidson, who's a reporter at NPR, and I ran Planet Money for a long time, for several years at NPR. So I've been sort of part of the public radio world for a long time, and part of the podcasting world of public radio for a long time. And I had a chance to observe sort of what was happening with the podcasts, you know, at Planet Money and at This American Life. The podcasts of those shows were growing tremendously and attracting new listeners every day, every month. And ad revenues were increasing, and just sort of excitement in general was increasing about it, about the form. Well, at the same time, from my perspective, as somebody who's creating those podcasts, it's a really exciting time. Like, you can just creatively, there's a lot that we can do. It feels like wonderful and sort of like expansive in a way that, you know, a new medium, I guess, sort of feels like. So it's felt like to me that there's like, okay, there's this wonderful new form that we've only begun to scratch the surface of the possibilities with, and it's very popular. Like, people are adopting it at rapid rates. So we should make more of this kind of programming. And there's lots and lots of places to play here. So that was the original idea for the company, is sort of raise some money and start creating programs, hire people, you know, put together shows.
And it's a business, right? The expenses are paid by ad revenue, essentially, right?
The expenses are paid by ad revenue at this point. Ad revenue, we see ad revenue as only one source of revenue for the company, and we're going to start rolling out other kinds of other revenue streams in the future.
One of which I think membership kind of things.
Yeah, membership. Like, so sort of like, you know, there's a lot of words for it that you hear. In sort of new media circles, it's called the freemium model. In the public radio world, it's called the pledge drive. you know, it's simply a way of sort of like taking your most engaged 10% and giving them an opportunity to support you financially, however that might be. And I think in public radio, the opportunity we give our listeners to support us financially is the pledge drive. I happen to feel like that's a little bit of a ham-fisted way of going about it, and I think there's probably better, more fun ways for everybody involved to do it and achieve the same results. So that's what we're hoping to do, is create, you know, sort of premium subscriptions for our most dedicated listeners, where, you know, they feel like they belong to the thing that we're doing. You know, they're paying a small monthly fee, and they get all sorts of cool things in return for that.
What kind of research, and how do you even go about researching the potential growth of podcast listenership? You know, I mean, you must believe that there are a host of ears out there waiting for good content. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's not anybody who is like sort of who's gone out and surveyed every single person in the world and said, you know, are you planning to become a podcast listener in the next 5 years, right? So what you do is you take data that's out there and then you try to extrapolate trends from that data. And the data that we knew about were, you know, sort of like domestically in the United States, how many people listen to the radio? And it's a lot. It's like 240 million people listen every week. They listen for 10 to 12 hours a week. And a lot of that listening is news and talk. News and talk is, I think, the single biggest category. It's either that or country music. They're sort of neck and neck of listening. And then you extrapolate. So, you know, as people pick up the habit of sort of like, oh, I could plug my phone into my dashboard, or now my dashboard can play a podcast, or whatever. A lot of that listening, so most of that listening happens in cars, but as cars become more capable of playing on-demand digital, you figure like some percentage of those people are going to, you know, start listening to on-demand listening, the same thing that's happening in TV. And so that's sort of where the way we sort of like imagined the trajectory. And then you add on top of that the fact that now everybody in the world essentially has a smartphone or some or audio capable phone anyway, and we're all walking around with earbuds wherever we go, and so there's all this additional time that is available for listening that wasn't before. So now you can I feel like my habits have changed. You know, when I run out the door now to go to the bank, I reflexively check my breast pocket to make sure my phone and my headphones are there, because I'm going to pop them in and listen to a podcast while I'm out running errands. And I'm assuming that that's happening to a lot of other people and will continue to happen. So that was sort of, it wasn't like we had hard data. We had a story that we believed that was constructed from data.
And so if you were to project out like 5 years, what do you see as the podcast listener numbers?
In the U.S. alone, I hesitate to say, but I, you know, I mean, right now it's something like, I don't know, 40 million people have listened to a podcast. I don't know. In 5 years, could that double? I think easily.
Hmm. And some of those people obviously are being pulled, at least in part, from terrestrial radio, right? From the radio that you tune in on a dial.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's partly some people are being pulled from terrestrial radio, and then I think it's added listening.
Right.
It's added capacity. Like there are more hours available to listen. The other thing that about podcasting and audio in general that I think is a big advantage right now, especially if you're trying to enter, you know, start a media business, is that, well, first of all, it's compared to print and TV, it's, you know, pretty wide open. There's just, you know, there's a lot of podcasts, but compared to, you know, the number of, you know, people trying to start websites with print and TV shows, it's pretty small still.
But so you mean the market's not saturated?
Right. I think not even close. But also it's the only form of media that you can consume while doing something else. You know, you can't go for a run and watch a TV show. But you can go for a run and listen to a podcast. And it's the only form of media that you can consume while driving, which was, I think, why radio was so has remained so strong for so long. So until we have driverless cars, I think we're all in good shape. Once the driverless car comes along, I think we're toast.
So, you know, about 10 years ago, not quite 10 years ago, I was working for a little public radio station in Maine, and I did this story about podcasting. And it was along the lines of like, wow, there's this thing people are doing in their basements and they're making a living at it. And, you know, they were probably making a couple $1,000s a month, maybe
right,
in ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably still true for a lot of podcasts out there. I mean, a lot of those original 10-year-old podcasts are still essentially online, available, fresh, new episodes are being put out. But that kind of $2,000 a month thing is not what you're talking about, right?
No. So first of all, I think some of those podcasts, I don't know which ones you're talking about, but some of them have grown into legitimate businesses in of themselves, you know, where like it started as an independent thing that one person was doing sort of in their spare time, and it has grown into, you know, an enterprise that employs people and pays health care. And I think, you know, sort of one of the quintessential stories along those lines is Roman Mars and the podcast 99% Invisible, where it started as sort of like his, a singular thing that he was doing, and he had ties to the public radio world and to PRX. And his
podcast is a kind of about design in our lives, right?
It's about design. It's a sort of a story narrative based podcast about design, and sort of like it's called 99% Invisible because, you know, the idea is that like there's a lot of things that are in the built world that you don't even notice, but somebody spent a lot of time and thought putting together, and we're going to tell that story. It's really cool. Like it's a great podcast, and they managed to keep it fresh every single episode. It's amazing, but also it is the example of sort of like a guy who started in his basement or whatever and garage and has grown this enterprise into not like a huge thing, but like, you know, he's got a staff now of a couple people and they're paying, you know, they have salaries and they have benefits and I would imagine that it's going to continue to grow. It seems like on an upward trajectory. And so I think there's a lot of people out there like that. And my hope was to sort of like be an incubator for people like that to sort of help move them along and help get their audiences bigger so that you don't have to take 5 years to do it. But, you know, we'll pay you the salary right now and we'll grow it together. We can sort of do it in a matter of months, get to that sort of level. And if we do that a bunch of times, then we're talking about a fairly large scale business.
Yeah. And one of the things that, going back to that story about like discovering podcasts 9 years ago, when I imagine the majority of podcasts out there, I think of kind of poorly recorded. I don't think of Roman Mars. I think of poorly recorded kind of idle conversations that are not terribly interesting and don't sound great, you know. Mm-hmm. And people seem to really want higher quality podcasts. How much is that kind of quality control, that production value, part of what you're setting out to do?
Oh, I mean, that's our entire strategy is to, like, we're doing something that I don't think anybody really is doing in the space right now, which is, you know, every show we do, for our first three shows, we come out of the gate with a staff of three people, you know, and we've put an editorial system in place where we go through several edits before they come out, and we're trying to, you know, we're mixing in Pro Tools and we're getting professional help on the mix, and we're trying to, I mean, like, and the technical side of it, I think, is just one part of it, and then the editorial side to me is the most important thing.
So the kinds of stories you're telling and how you're telling them.
The kinds of stories we're telling and how we're telling them, and sort of the care we're taking to sort of craft them into things that are engaging to as wide an audience as possible. And I think there is a link between, like, if you think of, you know, sort of, you know, on, you know, let's call those kinds of stories sort of highly produced, highly edited, you know, stories.
Right.
And then on the other side, you have, like, I'm going to flip on my recorder and talk to my best friend about video games or whatever and then put it up. So that's sort of the spectrum right now.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the market rewards the highly produced, highly edited ones. Like, if you look at the top of iTunes, most of them are ones that people have put a lot of thought into creating the content, and those are the ones that are rewarded with a large audience. So that's also sort of the bet we're making, is that if we put a lot of time and effort and care into crafting our shows and thinking about them, you know, editorially, that we will be rewarded with audience.
So at the beginning of this conversation, you were talking about how Serial's explosion has given you more energy for growing right now. And I wonder, in making the most of that opportunity, have you put or do you feel the need to put in place any kind of checks to make sure that the quality of the thing that you're producing stays where you want it to stay?
Well, that's the tension. So when I say grow faster, I'm not saying like green light shows that we otherwise wouldn't have green lighted. What I'm saying is, you know, spend more money now, you know, developing sort of like these well-crafted shows.
Hire more talent.
Yeah, hire people more, you know, sort of like spend more money now. Spend the money now that we were thinking about maybe spending in 8 months or a year, you know, to create, because that's the problem, to do the kinds of shows that we're thinking about doing, they're not, you know, in the world of podcasting, these are not cheap shows. In the world of media in general, they, you know, still like audio is much cheaper than, say, TV. But yeah, they're not, you know, they require, and mainly it's just sort of like, it's funny. I mean, the biggest expense is simply people. You know, there's no equipment is minimal. You know, we built our studio, which sounds, I think, really good. We built it for like $10,000. But you know, you need people, and you need to, you know, if you're doing a sort of a journalism-based show, you need to get them out and have them collecting tape and looking for good stories and sort of, you know, coming back and editing those stories. That's what takes the time, and that's what costs the money. And so we have to build that into our production schedule, enough people that people can be generating enough content so that it can come out on a weekly basis, but at the same time that it can, you know, keep at a high editorial standard.
Right. So you believe the audience potential is out there, and that clearly that advertisers are going to want to be part of your brand or associated with your brand. The other basic business plan question, I guess, is competition, right? I mean, who do you see as competition for listeners?
Well, right now I don't see anybody as competition because I feel like we're in the very we're in the very beginning here, where if I'm right and the audience grows from 40 million to 80 million, there is plenty to go around. We are nowhere near saturated. And if you think about, like, so let's just take the print journalism world as a way of, you know, and compare it to audio. You know, in print journalism, you have newspapers, you have magazines, you have specialty magazines, you have women's magazines, men's magazines, you have sports magazines, you have auto magazines. And in every category, you have 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 different entrants. Like, how many business magazines are there? How many business publications are there? And if you look at and then let's look at audio, you have essentially one or two national newspapers in you know, NPR and Marketplace and a couple of these other ones. And then you have like a couple of you know, policy discussion shows, you know, types of things. And then you have like a couple of sort of, like, I guess what I would call the equivalent of like a magazine. You have like, you know, This American Life and Radiolab, which is sort of like, you know, I guess you could sort of say the analog of like, I don't know, whatever, the New Yorker and Wired or something. You know, those are not exact metaphors, but you know what I'm talking about, right? And then you don't really have anything else. You know, you have Planet Money, which is sort of like a money and finance magazine and Freakonomics. But like, in terms of like the magazine category, there's really pretty much nothing. And so I think there's a lot to be done there. There's like music shows, but there's not like a music journalism narrative audio product. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I think that right now, you know, Serial. So This American Life launched Serial, right? Serial quickly became the number one podcast in history. And so you could view that as like, oh, well, This American Life launched this podcast that now took the number one spot. But they just ran at the very last Serial. They were like, oh, and by the way, if you haven't heard of the show called This American Life, check it out here, you know? And so like Serial reached like, you know, a bunch of new audience members that had never heard of This American Life, and then This American Life, and now they're sending them back to This American Life. So This American Life's audience grows as a result of that. And I think that's the fortunate world we're in right now. You know, 10 years from now, 12 years from now, I think, you know, we'll be in the world that, like, you know, the print world is in right now, where, like, you know, sort of one of the only ways to find your own audience is to steal it from somebody else. But I don't think we're there yet in audio.
Well, and public radio is getting into the podcast game too, right? Like, not only, of course, are public radio stations podcasting shows they're already airing over what we call terrestrial radio, but they're also launching podcast-only programs, essentially. Are they competition for you, or do you again just feel like there's so much space, I'm not worried?
I feel like there's so much space, I'm not worried. I think, you know, it's Yeah, I don't. I think that the more people, they're gonna attract. They're gonna find listeners who have never heard of podcasting, and those listeners are gonna be like, "Oh, I like this podcast. I'm looking for other ones," and then those people will discover us, and we'll do the same for other people. I really think that we're in this very early phase where, like, you know, we're in the beginning of sort of like the movie industry or something like that, where, like, you know, we're all just trying to, like, say, hey, there's this thing out here and you guys should all check it out, you know, and the more of us doing good stuff there is, the better that is for all of us.
And you, of course, have this great public radio pedigree, right, from This American Life and Planet Money. And why didn't you try to do this within the system?
I felt like there was a way that I saw to do it that was going to be a little bit faster, and a little bit less, a little bit more flexible. Public radio is, for all the innovation they're doing in the podcasting space, there's still this legacy business to sort of attend to, the terrestrial radio. And I wanted something that could focus entirely on digital. And, like, you will never be able to do that inside public radio. And nor should you. You know, you have, you know, millions and millions of people who are listening on the radio, and you have to, and I don't, like, in no scenario should you abandon those people or start lessening the quality of the work you're providing to them. So, but I wanted to be able to focus entirely on digital and sort of expanding this new sort of medium that I felt was out there. And it felt like I would be able to be, you know, sort of like a little bit more agile and entrepreneurial if it was outside the system.
Is it something about creative freedom too, maybe?
You know, not really. You know, it was more about, like, pacing and I guess sort of business model freedom, and then creative freedom. I mean, there was never, like, when I worked at Planet Money, like, we got to do all sorts of amazing stuff. You know, that it was never like, you know, that's, you're not allowed to do that, you know. So I've had editorial freedom at every show that I've worked at, you know, sort of almost complete editorial freedom. But it's more like to innovate outside of that, to sort of say, hey, this is working. Let's try this thing, but in a slightly different subject area and done a slightly different way. That's hard. You know, so, like, once Planet Money was up and running, it's very easy to continue to do really cool things within Planet Money. But if I'm like, I want to do the Planet Money of, I don't know,
horticulture.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Let's do that. Then that's hard. That's hard to sort of, like, it's hard to, like, there's, like, a lot of things that you have to sort of get done to make that happen. And then the other thing that I found was that I really wanted it to be for profit. And the reason is that I feel like, you know, profit, I think, is sometimes seen as, like, a dirty word inside public radio world, inside the world of public radio. And I think there is, you know, the profit motive is seen as a negative thing. And there is absolutely, you know, I think, you know, weird things happen to you when you get very wealthy, and, like, you can go wrong. But plenty of people become very wealthy and don't go wrong, A. But B, and more importantly, profit is what makes it possible to innovate. Profit is what makes it possible to do a new thing that people want, that you want to try, that could be really cool in the world. And, you know, people decry two things in public radio. They decry the lack of funding, and then they decry sort of the profit motive. But profit takes care of the lack of funding problem, you know, in a lot of the way. In the rest of the world, the way you get around the lack of funding problem is you make a profit. And so I really wanted to be able to do that, to sort of be able to become profitable doing one thing and then take the profits from that one thing and then use it to generate, you know, to seed other programs. And that's already happening in our company right now. Like, the startup podcast has become profitable. You know, it's become, you know, it's reached enough
listeners. In, like, how many months? Like, 4 months, right? 3 months.
Yeah. And so... in essence, what we're saying, you know, what we're saying by saying like we're going to ramp, you know, push up our production schedule a little bit and start spending money now that we were going to spend later is we're going to take the, you know, startup is sort of funding that, the ability to do that. So that's exciting.
So if all of your premises are correct, right, that mm-hmm. the listenership of podcasts is going to go from 40 to 80 million, I think that's what we were talking about.
I love how you're holding me to my, like, really pulled out of my nowhere hypothetical. Yes, but anyway, yes.
And, you know, people are going to be listening to podcasts a lot more. People who are listening to podcasts are going to be listening to more podcasts. Advertisers are going to make it profitable for you guys to continue to make content. What does it mean for the future of listening? Like, let's play it out. Say 10 years from now, what's our relationship with listening going to look like or sound like?
I mean, I think it's, well, I think it's going to look, I think the changes are both going to be more dramatic and less dramatic than we might imagine. So I think it's going to be, if I had to guess, I think it's going to be a lot like what's happening in TV. You know, there's still lots of people watch network TV, but not nearly as much as many people as watched it, you know, 15 years ago.
So people will still be listening to terrestrial radio, but not as many?
Absolutely. But mm-hmm. not as many. And the business model will shift away from making the mega hit. You know, like I don't think you're ever going to get in TV to, like, you know, the last episode of MASH, like, where, like, God knows how many people watched that episode, right? Like, it is just too fractured a landscape now, and everybody, but what that means is you can have these sort of, like, you create the space for more hits and more tailored hits, and so, like, a Breaking Bad could never have existed in the big three network era, and a Mad Men could never have existed, and all these other sort of, like, Game of Thrones could probably never have existed. I mean, there's, like, these, so, and I think that's what's going to look like. That's what it's going to look like in radio, is that there's going to be, like, startup will never have the audience of, you know, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, right? But it could generate a nice size audience for itself and become a very, you know, sort of profitable ongoing concern. And I think lots of podcasts can do that. And so what I see is sort of, like, you know, a lot more stuff happening. Hits being sort of smaller than they were in the past, but more of them and more spread out over all sorts of different subject areas. And, you know, moving more towards on-demand listening. Like, you're going to binge listen to stuff. You're going to, like, listen to the stuff that you want to listen to rather than what's on more and more. And again, these things take forever to fully happen, you know? So Law and Order is still on, right? You know, so it's like, it's not going away. And I think the radio, you know, like, radio will persist for a long time. It's not going away either. It's just there's going to be other stuff that's added to it.
Do you think there's a possibility, too, for some of the experimentation that you guys are undertaking and will continue to undertake to bleed into what kind of core public radio listeners will hear on terrestrial airwaves?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you have something like Modern Family where, you know, it's like, a gay couple adopting a child, you know, on network television. Like, that would never, like, I feel like that probably would never have happened without experimentation happening on the cable, you know, outside in cable land. You know what I mean? So I would imagine the same thing will happen with, you know, public radio and what's happening in podcasts. And I sort of feel like it's already starting to happen a little bit. Like, every once in a while I'll hear something that I feel like, oh, that was borrowed from, you know, that was borrowed from podcast land. What's interesting about, like, but it is, that's the thing, though, is that it's a very different habit. It's a very different experience listening to terrestrial radio and listening to a podcast. A podcast is you went out, you searched it, you downloaded it to your computer. You have chosen it. And so, like, how would you do Serial on network radio? Like, you couldn't assume that anybody was going to follow that story unless they'd chosen to download it from, you know, from episode one and stick with it. So there's only so much. I think they're pretty different. The behaviors are pretty different associated with sort of on-demand digital listening versus terrestrial radio listening.